I feel like we often get compared to our neighbor deserts, the Sonoran deserts. What makes us different?
It's totally cactus envy. So we have more cactus, but ours are smaller. And so the Sonoran desert has the saguaros. If you ask anybody, draw a picture of a cactus, I bet 99 out of 100 are going to draw a saguaro. We get too cold for it.
If anyone's ever talking about El Paso, it'll draw the alligators, the star on the mountain, and then a cacti, right? And so I often see a saguaro in there. And we work with Clive Cochran, graphic design professor, and he always has a saying to his students, close but no saguaro. Hello, everyone. My name is Daniel Carey Whalen. I'm the director of the Centennial Museum and Chualan Desert Gardens at the University of Texas at El Paso. And I'm excited to be here today because we're reviving the old Desert Diaries program. Some of you may remember Florence Schwein, who did a Desert Diaries program here on KTEP for several years. They were these little, nice little 3-minute segments that started your day. I think they were about 9 a.m. in the morning. And it just gave little factoids about the desert, the Chualan Desert, about this region. And we at the Centennial Museum and Chualan Desert Gardens, partnering with KTEP, with UTEP, we wanted to share our experience with the Chualan Desert, share our excitement about the desert, and to really bring it into your home. So I'm here this morning with Kevin Floyd, who's our botanical curator, and we're gonna just start talking about the desert. Maybe if you want to just introduce yourself, Kevin, and kind of tell us a little about yourself, maybe what brought you here to El Paso.
I've lived in El Paso coming up on 15, 20 years now. We moved here for my wife's job, and so came in. We'd been doing sort of this series of visiting places or living in places we never thought we would move to. So we met in California, lived in Oklahoma for a year, and Maryland for a couple years, and then we moved here. And just really loved it. Like I'd visited the eastern Sierra Nevadas, which is desert. I like desert environments. I mean, I'm a nature guy, so I like all environments are pretty cool. We came here. I did my PhD doing work on lizard ecology out in the desert. So spent, 4 days a week for 8 months a year out trapping lizards for about 4 years. And then got into insects and plants, and that's what led me to the Chualan Desert Gardens.
Yeah, I too am a transplant. I've been here about 12 years. My wife is a professor here at UTEP, and she moved us here, and then I started working at UTEP, and I've been the director for the last seven plus years. It's interesting. Never lived in the desert. I'm originally from the Midwest, and so it's definitely a different environment. But what's it like living in the desert? What do you think about living here?
Well, I don't like cold, so that's pretty good. It would be nice to have a little more rain, of course. But I think, the things that are really attractive to it, I think El Paso in particular, having the Franklin Mountains going through town and having, just that different topography, being able to see out to the Petrillo Mountains to the west, nice. Just having some variety to it, I think is really, really interesting. Seeing how the seasons change, which, we don't always think about as much here, but, the mountains turn green in the monsoon. Like, we do see that flush of green. So, it's different, but it is still a really beautiful place to live. But I imagine, coming from the Midwest, you must be used to, flat expanse of green and just not much else going on.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm from the Kansas City area, so it's kind of rolling hills, and then there are the Ozark Mountains in Missouri, southern Missouri. So I'm used to mountains, but used to green. Definitely, I think that was one of the hardest things moving here is the lack of green. But like you said, definitely I love the monsoon season because of it. And of course, then in the spring, everything's blooming. What were your first impressions when you moved here?
I've lived in desert and dry areas, so that part wasn't too much of a surprise. It is, you know, very different, I think, going back and visiting, you know, California or the East Coast and just seeing trees everywhere. So you don't see the buildings, you don't see the houses quite as much. Things are a little more hidden in the forest. I know some people have talked about, you know, if they're from El Paso, they visit a place with trees and it feels very claustrophobic. Right. Like they can't see, you know, they can't see the horizon. They can't see, you know, what's on the other side of the street necessarily. And so, you know, I certainly can agree with that. Seeing those vast expanses is really, really beautiful. And sort of that, you know, the mythology of the American West and the desert Southwest and the beautiful sunsets and all of that. So definitely really like that. And then just, you know, looking more carefully at the different environments, you know, you move in, you're like, oh, it's all creosote and mesquite, and that's what we have, and that's all there is. But then when you start, you know, looking at it a little bit more carefully, you see some of the cool cactus that we have, and, right. you know, you yeah. I think you appreciate things more as well. Like, you yes. go up to the, you know, go to the Guadalupes and go hiking, and it's like, oh, my God, these trees, it's amazing. I haven't right. seen this number of trees in one place in a year. So.
Right, right, yes, yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so as well. You know, moving here, definitely the vistas, sunsets. I mean, I feel like that's very people often talk about our sunsets. But yeah, I like the diversity in kind of just the little things. If you go to, you know, a place like up to the Oregon Mountains, we go hiking up there, and there's just different little biomes up there that are different than when we're in the Franklin Mountains. So yeah, I like that, the subtleness. I feel like there's a subtle beauty in the desert. That it takes a while. I think it's grown on me.
Yeah, you have to be a connoisseur.
Yes,
you
right.
have to. Yeah. yeah, connoisseur of the desert.
yeah, I think so. I think there is something, about that it takes a while to appreciate it. And you know, I'd never owned a home before I moved here, so we bought a home, and so we had a yard, and so I'd never really been a gardener before, and so I became a gardener, and I think just being, you know, in the dirt and on the ground level and watching, you know, as the seasons change and seeing the different things in my yard kind of blooming, and then other people's yards, oh, wow, what's that, you know, and mm-hmm. see if I could get it in my yard, so yeah. But it's definitely I feel like a slower appreciation for yeah. the desert, I think, like, you know, we're not alone. I mean, we're transplants, but, you know, so many people are from El Paso. You know, they've lived here a lot of their lives, but I feel like they have similar reactions to the desert. I mean, what do you think? What's your impression of other people's kind of like common reactions of the desert?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's very almost disparaging. It's like, oh, it's the desert, you know, ugh, the desert. Oh, it's all so ugly. It doesn't matter what's going on. And I think it's partly, you know, people who aren't able to go out and actually look at it. If you're only seeing it from, you know, the freeway or, you know, flying in, it can be pretty monotonous. And, right. you know, certainly all of our spiky plants collect garbage bags that are blowing in the wind. So right. it can yes. definitely not look that great. So I right. think people, you know, first impression maybe isn't so great. And if you don't have some experience, maybe in school, going on a field trip up to the Franklin Mountains or going out to Waco Tanks and seeing the beauty and having someone to sort of help show you what's going on and point out some of those differences and helping you to look a little bit more carefully and seeing some of the amazing plants, the beautiful insects we have, like all the cool birds, mammal tracks. Like, there's a ton going on, but you really do have to look for it. And I think people just miss that without a little more focus or care.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I know you and I have had, you know, plenty of conversations about this, and, you know, I wanted to talk about our exhibit that's going on right now at the Centennial Museum, Cultivating Your Home, Embracing Chihuahuan Desert Diversity. And that was one of the impetuses for us doing this podcast, Reviving Desert Diaries. But it was that you know, people were using words like, you know, barren and, you know, there's nothing here and kind of these, like you said, very disparaging language. And so one of the reasons, well, there's two reasons. I mean, one of the reasons, the first reason was it's the 25th anniversary of the Chuaon Desert Garden. So they started in 1999, and we're going to talk about more of that later, but that was one of the reasons. We wanted to celebrate the Chuaon Desert Gardens, the 25th anniversary, but we also realized as we were looking into it, as we were having conversations, that people one of the impetuses of the gardens is to get desert plants into people's yards, right? And so having people kind of love where they live. What are some of the themes of the exhibit that we were talking about?
Yeah, so one of the big themes really is just this idea of, you know, we are in this really biodiverse desert, that deserts are not barren wastelands, and really trying to get people excited by it. I mean, this is where they live. Either they're transplants like we are, or they're from this area. And we want people to be excited by that. We don't want people to think, oh, I just have to have a boring desert yard. I just have to have Chuaon desert plants. I can't have cool plants like, you know, roses and, you know, crepe myrtle and all these other plants that are not native here. And I think people, you know, they like those plants because that's what's available in commercial nurseries, but also it's what you see on Instagram. It's what you see in like gardening magazines. And it's just creating this stereotypical, boring North American landscape. There's nothing different about a yard in El Paso to a yard in Houston to a yard in New York. They can all, a lot of them, sort of the default, just look the same. Right. And it's like, we don't live there. We live in a really cool place. Let's embrace that. Let's get people excited and think, how can I bring that like awesome biodiversity into my house? How can I go outside and appreciate it? So really trying to get people to understand and appreciate the really cool place that we live. That's one of the main focuses of the exhibit.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that I really like about it. The exhibit, what we do in the garden, of kind of getting people to love where they live, embrace the diversity. The Chuaon Desert itself is one of the most diverse deserts in North America and one of the most diverse in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I came from, my studies, I came across this geographer's term called a sense of place, right? And this idea that every place has a sense to it, and that sense is, constructed by humans, right, through the built environment, but it's also constructed by geology, right, the land, the landscape, the mountains and the rivers, but then the biology, the flora, the fauna. What do you think of this notion of a sense of place of and how the Chuaon Desert Gardens is kind of dealing with that, how this exhibit's dealing with that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, disconnect. I think we just don't think about that necessarily either in educational settings or then afterwards when we're in this area. And so without something that's really directly trying to connect people to that sense, I think you lose ties to your land. You don't really know where you're at, what's going on with it. And I think it can lead to, you know, that sense of, it's hard to put words to it, but it's just kind of a sense of unease or a lack of connection to where you are. And if you don't have a connection, if you don't feel at home where you are, then, you know, you're not going to have that sense of place. You're not going to have that feeling that, you know, oh, I'm home. I'm in El Paso. This is where it is. This is the area that feels right to me. And so I think one of the things we try to do, certainly at the gardens, is bring in those different plants that are from the area so people can think, you know, I just don't want a mesquite in my yard. It's like, cool, no problem. There's tons of other options that are available that are native to our area that do reflect the long-term history, the geology, the rainfall, the climate, all of that. and that can be reflected in your yard, and we can show people that in the gardens.
No, that's definitely one thing that that I really like about the gardens is all the different species that we have. I know we throw out different numbers, 600, 700, but there's a lot, right? And the variety, and to see it and think, yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't like mesquite, the beans I know that fall, and so they have to clean up, but there's other options for a tree, and it's... you know, I've grown to appreciate the shade of a mesquite tree or a desert willow, right? Mm-hmm. That on a hot summer day, I used to think, oh God, this thing, the leaves are so thin, right? But I swear, as we say, it's a dry heat in the desert. Every time that I get in the shade of a mesquite tree, I really can feel it. Breaks the sun just a little bit more, and I really appreciate it. I fortunately have them. I live on a hill, so there's an arroyo behind me, and there's some great mesquite trees that are in the arroyo. So I get to have them kind of right on the edge of my property, but I don't have to deal with the beans and all those. So. Mesquite is a great one. But that idea of the sense of place. I mean, I really think, one of the things we talk about, like some iconic plants in the desert. And the first one that I think of and the first one that I saw when I moved here was the Nopal, right? Mm-hmm. The prickly pear cactus, right? And I remember it was like my first day here, I saw a tuna or a prickly pear and bent down and picked it up because I was like, oh, wow, this is so cool. You can eat this. And of course, I got all the little spikes in my fingers and was like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. But that, this then to find out, I'd never heard that you can also eat the cactus itself, the Nopal, and so Nopalitos. We had them at the opening of the exhibit. We've had them in the past. They're good eating. But, that idea of a sense of place, I also think is, the food that is provided by the garden as well, or the plants of the desert. So what do you think of that connection?
Yeah, I think food is obviously a big input to it. It's not easy. I mean, obviously people have been living in this area for millennia and able to find resources. But like your experience with the little spines, the glochids, and the prickly pear fruit, they take a little bit of work. It's not – most places you're not just picking a berry off a tree and popping it in your mouth. Everything requires a little bit more work here. But, I mean, even things like the pine trees, that this year was a good year for pine nuts, pinon. Okay. And we didn't see it here, but, in higher elevations where they're found, there were people posting stories about, getting great harvest of the pine nuts, which of course are, high protein, high fat, a really good food resource. So, so there's a lot of food here. There's a lot of, like you said, the sense of place, it's finding the things that actually are in this area. Yeah. But they all take a little bit of work for sure. You definitely want to have somebody who can show you how to properly, prepare that Nopal or that tuna or, the mesquite pods or things like that.
Yeah, I think I like that. Like there's something about similar to the subtle beauty of the desert that things take a little more work here, right? It doesn't come easy necessarily. What makes the Chihuahuan Desert so unique?
So it's got we're the largest desert in North America, and about 80% of it is actually in Mexico,
right.
And we're the sort of highest and driest of the four North American deserts.
Right.
So it's the Mojave is the sort of hottest. That's in mostly in Southern California. There's the Sonoran, which is sort of centered on Arizona, going down into Baja. And then there's the Great Basin, which is also considered a desert. It's the coldest of all of them. That's if you're ever sort of around, you know, Vegas and Salt Lake City in that area. So, not a lot of rain, but it gets a lot colder. And then where we are, we're a higher elevation, so we're a little bit colder because of that.
Right.
And typically not quite as hot. But we're also very isolated. So especially going into Mexico, there's the Sierra Madres, the Oriental and Occidental, that make sort of the boundaries of the Chihuahuan Desert. And so the desert's this basically high plateau in between these two big mountain ranges. And because of that, things have been really isolated. And so isolated over time leads to, you know, evolution and adaptation and diversity. And so a lot of the plants and animals that are in the Chihuahuan Desert are only found here because they've been, you know, isolated from their cousins or their, you know, the ancestral populations for so long that they've adapted to these conditions. And so we've got, I think the numbers are something like a quarter of all cactus species in the world are found in the Chihuahuan Desert. A lot of those are, again, only found in the Chihuahuan Desert. So there's just a lot of really sort of interesting plants we get. You know, we're a little bit, the higher elevation, we're a little cooler, although it doesn't always feel like it in the summer. But, but you know, check the weather in Phoenix and you'll see we are a cooler desert. And then, typically a little bit drier. And then we do get freezes. That's the other part that people don't always think of. Sometimes they're really hard freezes like we had, you know, in 2011, I think, which was a very unusual freeze. But, you know, we typically have freezes. So, you know, the plants have to be able to handle both the hot and the cold.
Well, and I know we're gonna be really talking about that, I think, in future future discussions, the diversity of the plants and the diversity of the animals and how the geography shapes it is really I always find really fascinating. And I feel like we often get compared to our neighbor desert, the Sonoran Desert. So what makes us different from the Sonoran Desert?
Well, in some ways, it's totally cactus envy. So we have more cactus, but ours are smaller. And so the Sonoran Desert has the saguaros. And so the saguaro, if you ask anybody, draw a picture of a cactus, I bet 99 out of 100 are going to draw a saguaro. It is the cactus. And it's a Sonoran species. And so, we get too cold for it. So you do see people that try to put it in landscapes around here, and it'll survive until it doesn't, which is when we get a cold snap, or you have to protect it.
Well, my neighbor, I have two of my neighbors have saguaro, and every winter they wrap it up. It looks like a mummy wrapped up because it can't survive a freeze. Right?
I think they can take like a light freeze, but definitely nothing like we typically get here. And they also get a little bit more rain. And so I think those are the main sort of points of envy that people have. But the other part that's interesting is there's not as many population centers in the Chihuahuan Desert. A lot of those are in Mexico. And of course, you know, in the United States, we have sort of that blind eye to things that aren't within our border. A lot of maps just kind of end, you know, at the U.S.-Mexico border. So you're like, well, that plant can't possibly just end at that arbitrary line. It obviously goes south, but you know, we just don't include that all the time. And so, you know, we are the big population center of the Chihuahuan Desert with, you know, us and Juarez and, you know, Las Cruces, the Metroplex. But you compare that to Phoenix and compare that to, you know, Tucson or Vegas, you know, there's places that are just bigger. And so I think that, you know, that's what becomes in, I don't know if it's popular culture, but it's definitely what's in the culture. It's the stuff that people see in magazines or in movies or things like that. They don't see the Chihuahuan Desert. They see the other deserts.
Well, I always think, and I've said this before, we've talked about it before, we work with Clive Cochran, who's in the graphic design professor in the art department, and he always has a saying to his students whenever they put a draw something for, you know, it's just, you know, it, And graphic design is a good example, I think. It's like whenever a designer, you know, you have to say a lot with just a few images. And so if anyone's ever talking about El Paso, it's like, okay, what's El Paso? You know, they'll draw the alligators, the star on the mountain, and then a cacti, right? And so I often see a saguaro in there, and he has this line to his students, close, but no saguaro.
Yeah.
You know, that you're just not, you know, you're in the wrong desert.
Embrace the prickly pear. I feel
right.
like that's a very distinctive shape. And, you know, we've got a lot of diversity of prickly pears here. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. And it has that. I mean, I also know the saguaro is a very, you know, an iconic, you know, if you go to some place like the Sonoran Desert Museum outside of Tucson, you know, they do a great job talking about the saguaro being this, you know, iconic species that's a habitat. You know, there's birds that specifically live in it. You know, it's so much for that environment. And I almost, God, what do they call, like, a wolf is a, what is like a
keystone,
or
apex.
Yeah. Keystone or apex species. Right. Yeah. I feel like that, but I mean, also I think that goes back to what we're talking about here in the Chihuahuan Desert and why, you know, importing something from out of the Chihuahuan Desert into the Chihuahuan Desert doesn't make sense is that there's a whole, you know, evolutionary process that went on with the saguaro, right? Like the animals that live in it and thrive off of it are Sonoran Desert species, right? And so, and we have the same thing here, right? So that there's all these different species that are living with and have evolved with our plant species here.
Yeah, and we want to keep that, you know, those connections. We want to keep those interactions, those ecological interactions, the, you know, who's eating who, who's able to help pollinate which plant, just all those interactions. We want to, you know, the plants are the base of that. And so
right.
we want to make sure that we're celebrating those native plants because they're important for the entire functioning of the environment here.
So we talked about the uniqueness of the Chihuahuan Desert. And how can people in El Paso and the region, how can they embrace the uniqueness of the Chihuahuan Desert?
I'm a broken record with all this stuff, but it's, you know, really focusing on the native plants. The
right.
the plants are really what sets the foundation for the desert. I mean, we can't recreate the Franklins through your yard. I mean, there's not so many things you can do with the geology, but we can really embrace those native species. And so keeping the unique species that are found in the desert, in the Chihuahuan Desert, and bringing those, you know, appreciating them, bring them into your yard, I think that's one of the main things you can do. Because again, when you bring in the plants, you're also going to bring in the insects that feed on the plants. You'll bring in the birds that feed on the insects. You'll bring in, you know, maybe the lizards that are eating the insects. Like, you just bring in that whole, you know, connection of all of the animals and the plants and animals that are found here.
Yeah. So what, and we've talked about this a lot, but and we get into it in the exhibit as well. What is a native plant? What makes a plant native?
So it's really, you're looking for something that has evolutionary or long-term interactions with the other plants and animals in the area, which is a very squishy definition.
Right.
Because then you're wondering, you know, how long is something? So does it have to be there before it becomes native?
Yeah.
Or considered native? And so there isn't necessarily a strict, like, if it's been here 500 years, we're done.
Right.
Sometimes people use sort of European settlement as a sort of boundary between the two. But indigenous peoples move plants around too. So,
right.
you know, there's a lot of movement of plants, you know, by humans for a long time.
Right.
So we're really looking for something that, you know, evolved in this place, that has, you know, that has evolved in this climate, that has evolved with these other plants and animals that are found in that area.
Right.
And then it can become tricky in terms of, you know, a Chihuahuan Desert native plant. Well, the Chihuahuan Desert goes, you know, hundreds
right.
of miles into Mexico, and it's a very
right.
different condition. So, you know, is a plant from the southern Chihuahuan Desert more native in El Paso than a plant from the Sonoran Desert, which
right.
is, you know, a 3-hour drive from here.
Right, exactly.
It's like officially, yes, that is it's because it's sharing more of the shared climate, some of the shared geology, even though it's farther away. But it can get really, I mean, I feel like that's where the philosophy majors can come in and sort of figure out what is truly native.
Right,
so
yeah.
Typically closer to where you are, been there for a long time, wasn't brought in by people. And that's basically what we're going with a native plant.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then on the other side, you know, what's an invasive species then?
Yeah, so when you're looking at non-native plants, so you have the native and then the non-native. Non-native is pretty much anything that wasn't here that was brought in for whatever reason. And then invasives are ones that are causing problems.
Right.
And so you can make a distinction between non-native and harmless and non-native and causing harm.
Uh-huh.
And the invasives are the ones that cause harm. So like Palo Verde is one. It's not native here, at least the species that we typically grow in here. It's another Sonoran species.
Right.
Is it causing harm? Hard to say. Like it is, you see a bunch of bees on it. Seems to be providing resources for
people love it
for a while. Yeah, so it seems to be okay. But if it starts, you know, out competing the native plants where we see nothing but Palo Verde, that's when it kind of crosses that threshold from being just a non-native into an invasive. And then if it is an invasive, that's when, you know, invasive species are things that we really need to be, you know, monitoring and trying to reduce because they're causing harm.
Right.
And they are hard to control. So
yes,
it's much better to keep them out in the first place than to try to eradicate them once they're here.
Right. Yeah. I think when I first moved here, I'd heard the state of New Mexico was spending, you know, thousands of dollars,
millions,
to rip out salt cedar.
Yeah.
And I just boggled my mind. Wow, I didn't even think of that. But why salt cedar? I mean, why is it so invasive? It propagates like crazy.
So salt cedar, it's a tree from Asia. It has beautiful pink flowers, but really good at basically germinating and outcompeting cottonwood. So it lives along waterways typically. You know, the native landscape would be cottonwoods and willows. And so the salt cedar is basically able to outcompete them. It also can deal with our salty water and accumulate that salt, and sort of it accumulates it in its leaves and then drops the leaves, so the soil around it becomes saltier, potentially becoming too salty for the other plants to survive. And so it can really just choke out all of the native plants and cause a lot of problems with that. It does, you know, see insects on it when it's pollinating. So, it's not a 100% negative, but it is something that is really impacting the ability of the native plants to survive.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's so fascinating. And I didn't really think about that distinction between non-native and invasive, but I think it makes sense because, yeah, I know we have a few non-native species in the garden that seem to be not harming anything.
And we deal with this every time when I'm looking at plants for the plant sale, because the nurseries, the wholesale nurseries we order from, do not have all Chihuahuan desert species, so we bring in other plants as well. But we're trying to make sure that we're not bringing in anything that's invasive. So non-native but adapted is okay. Like rosemary, not native to North America, South America, but does well. I've never seen it like growing out in the wild. I think once you get it out of cultivation, it can't survive our environment. And that's a good example of a non-native that's not invasive.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the plant sale. So how can we embrace the desert in our home?
Again, get some plants. We're looking for, plants either from the plant sales that we run, the Florafest plant sales that have been going on now, I think 32 or 33. So those have been going on for a long time. They were, you know, created to bring in plants that weren't available in nurseries, native plants.
Nice.
Some of the nurseries are carrying some native plants as well. But you do have to be careful. Like, they aren't always labeled as native. So you always need to be, you know, Googling stuff. Like, they'll have a native plant, a native, a non-native. And right. you're like, well, they're all in the same section. They must all be, you know, native plants. But for the most part, the nurseries aren't concerned about that. They're concerned about, making money, but they're right. concerned, you know, some of them, like the local nurseries are more focused on making sure there's plants that will survive in our environment. The big box ones, it's whatever they're being sent. So
right.
a lot of the stuff there just does not do well here
right.
without a lot of work. Whereas the natives, you know, they don't take as much work. They're yeah. from here, so you don't have to water them constantly through the summer and
right.
baby them through the winter and all that.
Yeah, no, that's one of the beauties of not only can you get a beautiful plant, right, a native plant, but that it's usually pretty low maintenance. And once you get it started, I think most plants I put in my yard that I kill are in the first year.
Yep.
But once they get going, then they're pretty self-sufficient, I feel mm-hmm. like. And
yeah.
A little bit of water in my irrigation, but that's all. That's also pretty low. So drought tolerant plants in your yard.
Yeah.
What about other activities that can be done to kind of embrace the Chihuahuan desert?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically get out into the desert. That's
yeah.
that's one of the big things. There's all sorts of groups now that help with hikes. So if you're not somebody that's comfortable, like I know you go hiking all the time, you can just often go.
Yeah.
But if somebody's newer, doesn't know where to go, there's different Facebook groups, We Hike,
right.
and some others that have popped up.
Meetup groups.
Yeah, Celebration of Our Mountains often
right.
has organized field trips, and you can track them down. The state parks, both Franklin and Waco,
right.
they usually have guided hikes, you know, at least a couple times a month. Rio Bosque, like that, you know, it's a UTEP managed property in the lower valley-ish.
Right.
They do two guided field trips, guided hikes a month. They're pretty much all of those. State park has admission fees, but just about everything else, you know, they're largely free to attend.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, designed for beginners. Yeah, you don't necessarily, or at least they'll tell you. There are some hikes that are like, okay, see that mountaintop?
Right.
That's where we're going. Let's go.
Right. I've definitely heard of some pretty intense hikes.
Yeah, but you don't have to do that.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, better beginner hikes and other ways of really getting out there. And I got to say, if you really don't want to go hiking, go on a nature walk, because, you know, I'm into birds, plants, insects. So
right.
like a long hike for me is like a mile, and that's still 4 hours of work because I'm stopping and looking at the plants and the insects
right.
and taking
yeah.
pictures and all of that. So definitely a slow pace when you're looking at all the cool critters.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely birding. I know you're a big birder. We're going to talk about birds in another episode. But I know I got into birding just because it's so easy to, you know, they're the closest thing we're going to be to wild animals for the most part. You know, there's definitely some mammals that come into my neighborhood, some deer and some fox and whatnot. But, you know, for the most part, you know, birds are, you know, wild animals, and they're easily accessible because they're pretty much everywhere we go. And then when you get out and in just a place like Rio Bosque, you're going to see even more of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, yeah, some birding, hiking. We're going to, you know, there's also, you know, the Autobahn and meetup groups. We're going to, in the show notes, kind of list some of the resources that people can go check out that we know of. And hopefully if other people have some, they can drop them in there as well. And then, of course, gardening. I mean, I think, as I said, you know, moving here, I started gardening for the first time, and it's a great way to, I spent probably 2 hours this weekend out in my yard mm-hmm. fixing a sprint irrigation. I usually don't do that kind of stuff, but it's a good workout. It's good exercise. Get some vitamin D, right? Right now the leucophyllum, the Texas rain sage, are really blooming. I think it knew that this rain that we just got was coming in.
yeah. That's one of my, I'm like, they're not magic. They cannot predict the future. But yes, they are really beautiful right now.
Yeah. Yeah. They really came out. So, you know, good to see that. Well, I think that's all we have for in this episode. And we're definitely going to be back talking about the 25th anniversary of the Chihuahuan Desert Garden. Thank you for joining us. And Kevin, I appreciate our conversation. It was great to have you join us here for our inaugural edition of Desert Diaries. I'm Daniel Carey Whalen with the Centennial Museum and Chihuahuan Desert Gardens. I look forward to everyone joining us to celebrate life in the Chihuahuan Desert. See you next time on Desert Diaries.
Desert Diaries is recorded in the KTEP Public Media Studios and is a production of the University of Texas at El Paso Division of Marketing and Communications. Host is Daniel Carey Whalen, producer is Charles Fench, engineering by Paul Castro.
Good morning. My name's, or I guess it's not necessarily going to be morning. Yeah. Okay. I'm already messing that up, huh? these will be the outtakes.
The first two sentences, two words, and we're crashing and burning.